Our lesson today is found in the book of Genesis, part of the 9th chapter and the 10th chapter. We left off speaking to you how that God entered into a covenant with Noah and promised that he would not bring a flood of water anymore upon the earth, and that he gave a sign, and that was the rainbow. And we find that after this, these three sons of Noah are named in this chapter. They are Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And of these three sons, the whole earth was overspread. They then are the three persons who likewise caused everyone that has been on this earth from then to come forth. They are the fathers then of the new world. And we find that after they come out of the ark, they had to work. They had to go ahead and build, and they had to have things to eat and to drink and so forth. And we find that Noah, he became a husbandman. He became, like Cain, a tiller of the ground. He had been diverted from his employment for almost 100 years in building the ark that God had commanded him to build. But now, there were no people on the earth but him and his sons, so he went back to his employment, namely, a husbandman. This teaches us that God may, in our lifetime, take us from our calling at times, and after he has used us for what he has in purpose, then we are to return to our calling, and we are to be diligent, and we are to be faithful in our calling in which God has placed us. And it wasn't anything for Noah to become a husbandman, a tiller of the ground. It wasn't beneath him to be this. He then was a man that worked in the ground. We are all by nature of the earth, and we are all upon this earth, and we are all hastening to the earth. How quick, we know not. But it's a sure thing that dust we are, and to dust we shall return. And Noah, he became a husbandman and made a vineyard. He planted this vineyard, and in this vineyard, of course, he had a good crop, a good harvest, plenty of grapes. And now, whether he made a feast on a kind of God blessing of this, what he had done, we know not, but at least he began to drink of the wine that he had made from the grapes, and he became drunken. A sad thing, my dear Hebrews, after such a remarkable deliverance from being spared, where the rest of the world had been drowned and he had been spared, he fell into the sin of drunkenness. The commentary says it probably was the first time that wine was made out of grapes. I don't think so. I think before the flood, there had been people likewise that had been drunk many a time. And in all probability, Noah had warned them, spoken to them concerning this sin. Surely they had that wisdom and understanding to make strong drink out of grapes and other things that they used to make liquors. Even the most savage persons, Indians, who were found in this country when they came here, they had strong drink and wine and liquors. So I think that Noah, he had not just planted a few vines to have some grapes to eat. He planted a vineyard for what? Who plants a vineyard but for wine? So Noah, he fell into the sin. Surprisingly, probably, he did not think or had no recollection, probably, that If he drank too much, he would get drunk. But he did. What I don't like is that it's not recorded of this sin that Noah did, that he came to repentance, that he was sorry that he had become drunk. I'm sure if he had the grace of God in his soul, which he did have, he must have been. Sad that it isn't written there. It would have been better, I thought, myself personally, had it been written like that. But you all have probably seen people that are drunk. I hope that none of you may fall into this sin. But you know, when a person is drunk, they don't know what they're doing. They do things that if they were sober and you told them they'd done that, they would be ashamed of themselves. Some of them dance, some of them sing, some of them do odd things. But Noah, he undressed himself completely, naked, and he went and laid in his tent. You read of Adam and Eve, so that when they sinned, their eyes went open, and they saw that they were naked. What did they do? They fled. They went amongst the trees to hide themselves from God because they were naked. Noah didn't try to hide himself. He lay there naked in his tent. And we find that one of his sons, Ham, came, and he discovered his father laying in this condition. So this son, instead of taking something and covering his father's nakedness, he went to his two brothers, and he told them about it. He said, come on, come and look. See how father is laying there like this, making a fool out of his father, making a mockery of it, and hoping that the two brothers would be just like him. Now these two brothers, they weren't like him. When they heard this, that their father was laying there naked, they did entirely different than what Ham did. They took a cloak and they went backwards and they covered the nakedness of their father. So this, what Ham done, was an awful thing. In the first place, we are not to mock and to laugh at other people's sins, for we know not how soon we might fall into them ourselves. Much less should we do it if it is our parents. We are duty-bound to honor our parents and not to mock and to laugh at them. For this son, he must have been a bad character, for he showed it in this action that he did. And now, Noah, he sinned by becoming drunk. This likewise was something that he fell into surprisingly. He probably never had been drunk before, and he never became drunk thereafter. To make this a cause why we can get drunk, if Noah got drunk, why can't we, is entirely wrong. Noah didn't do this to set an example, but God has given that it's been written in the Bible to a warning for us that we may not fall into the same sin. Noah, when he awoke, we find that he knew what his younger son had done unto him. Now, who was the younger son? Some say that Ham was the second son. He was not the younger son. But Ham was the only one that had a son. And this son's name is Canaan. And some think that Canaan, this younger son, He seen this, and he went and told his father Ham. Because Noah, when he speaks out the curse, he speaks it out over Canaan. He don't speak it out over Ham. Noah, he was given to know what his younger son had done unto him, his grandson probably. And when he had heard this, as I said, it would have been nice had he fallen into his own sin before God and confessed it. But we read the spirit of prophecy came upon him, just like the spirit of prophecy came upon Jacob when he was on his dying bed, and he spake out to his sons what would befall them. So the spirit of prophecy came upon Noah, surprisingly, after being drunk, to have the Spirit of God come down and take possession of him, which happened to Noah. And Noah, he began to curse his younger son. "Cursed be Cain," he says. "A servant of servants shall he be to his brethren. And blessed be Shem. Blessed also be Japheth, who shall dwell in the tents of Shem." He blessed then the two sons that had covered him while he had been laying there in this condition. Now we would think that Noah done this in enmity, done this because this younger son had not covered him. This isn't the way the Spirit of God operates, my hearers. The Spirit of God here, you read this, you follow the history of these three sons, it gives us the proof that Noah, he spake as God gave him to speak what would become of his three sons and all their seed. And what came upon this seed, you follow it in the Bible. Even if you're just a natural person, you say how true the spirit of prophecy was in the mouth of Noah. He spake out then a curse over Cain, the son of Ham. In this curse, of course, Ham was considered. And now this race of people that came forth from Ham, they had already a curse upon them. They were the people who inhabited the land and against whom the Israelites continually were making war. They were under a curse for 800 years of this Canaanites. They had dominion. They were strong. They were a formidable people. But after 800 years, we find that Israel prevailed over them. They were brought under tribute, and many of them were slain by the sword. The Canaanites then were a people that were under the curse of God. We see in this that a people, a nation, a family, or an individual may be under the curse of God. And it takes sometimes quite a number of years before God's curse comes down upon such. We see that in this example of the Canaanites. It took God all those years before he brought the curse upon them. They were a cursed people, and they are to this day yet under the curse of God. An innumerable multitude of people came forth out of the seed of Ham. And we have in Africa, which is well known to us, great country. Millions of people live in Africa. They are of the seed of Ham. For generations, these people They were nothing else but ignorant, blind, stupid. They were sinful creatures living in all sorts of sin and iniquity. The better part of that country was under the slavery. So many of these people that lived in Africa were slaves. But they likewise were taken by men, captured, put upon boats, and brought over to America, sold like beasts at the market for whoever wanted them, the best price. And they had to work as slaves for those who purchased them. God did not command them to do this. What these people done, who went over there and took these people, God most certainly will visit them for that. But this is what this nation experienced, this generation of Ham. According to the commentary, there are still about one half of the people in Africa slaves. In this country, we know they were brought here, and they were slaves too, down south. It wasn't up here in the Northern Territory that there was so much of that. And of course, these Negroes, they likewise had been freed from their slavery by an act of Lincoln, which was good, for God didn't want them to be slaves. But we know from history what this race of people is, even in this country. There was hardly any Christianity to be found in this particular country, Africa. They knew nothing about Christ or about salvation. They were kept this way. What a vast difference with the race that descended from Shem and from Japheth. From Shem came the Jewish nation, Abraham. He descended from them, and Christ came forth out of the descendants of Shem. They were blessed by Noah. Blessed be the Lord God of Shem, he says. He didn't say blessed be Shem. Blessed be the Lord God of Shem. Shem then was given to know that God was his God, and that God likewise would dwell amongst this people, this generation that came forth from him. Of this Japheth, according to the commentary, he is the father of half of the human race, half of it. So many people came forth out of the seed of Japheth. This saying that Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem meant that in due time, the Jews, who had been richly blessed by God, as the only people who had been given the scriptures, had been given to know that their God was in heaven above, they likewise came to lose this blessing by their unbelief. They rejected the Messiah, the mediator. And by rejecting the Messiah, then the seed of Japheth became the Gentiles. They became members in the Christian church. At first, Jew and Gentile were joined together. The Gentiles are we. We dwelled in the tents of Shem. We were united together in worshiping the only true God. These prophecies, my hearers, are so full of truth. Throughout the history, you can follow it. It was God that was speaking already at the beginning of this second world about the races that would occupy this earth. That Japheth was likewise brought by the fall of the Jews to the knowledge of Christ, and they were given to enter into the church. And this church has been in existence throughout the ages that this world has stood. Of these people then, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, they were spoken to by God himself through the mouth of Noah. And what God says, he most certainly fulfills. And we find that Noah, he lived after the flood 350 years, a long time. All the days of Noah were 950 years. He lived 20 years longer than Adam. He did not reach the age of Methuselah. He was 16 years short of that. But he lived a long time. He became probably a preacher of righteousness. With this difference, he preached to his own generation, his own seed, his own children that came forth out of his children. Noah, he's seen two worlds. The first world he lived in, God covered it with a flood. The second world he lived in for 350 years. And he was a man that was spoken of in the scriptures. He was an heir of the righteousness of faith. And when he died, he went home to a better country, my hearers. Blessed man, Noah. He was given such a long life because he was one of God's children. He was spoken of that he was a perfect man. He was not a sinless man, but he was a perfect man. He was in sincerity and in truth, living here upon earth. But God set a period to his life. The time came when Noah died. God has set a period to my life and your life, and we know not how soon that period might end. Necessary, my hearers, to be taken by the grace of God in this life and made a new creature in Christ Jesus, shall we go to that place where Noah went and be with him in glory above. We find after this that probably even while Noah was alive, the people, they decided that they would be joined together and be one nation, be a strong nation. Now, God had not commanded this. God had wanted them to separate themselves upon the earth. But they, against the express commandment of God, decided no. They felt that if they were joined together, they were more sure. They were more safe. They wanted to be strong. They wanted to make a name for themselves. And they decided that they would all dwell in one place. They traveled east, and they found a beautiful place where they thought they all could stay together, and when they were all together, then they could love each other, they could help each other, and they could live with each other. Thinking of this, I thought how it is when God gives that people are born again. If you meet somebody that's born again, you have a conversation with them, and you find that the same love is in their hearts as God has poured out in yours, there's union there, there's love there. You love that person for God's sake. And if that person or you should run into trouble, but then there will be a helping hand. You would like to live together with such people. That's how churches are united in love, in helping each other. So these people, as they came to this plain, a beautiful place, a place where they were sure everything would grow and would bring forth abundantly, and they would like to dwell there. So they said, let's build us a city, and let's build us a tower that will go up to heaven. There must have been cities before the flood, but the commentary speaks about those that built cities. They were mostly rebels. They were enemies of God. Most of the people dwelt in tents. They didn't dwell in cities. And now these people immediately, probably led by one called Nimrod, who seemed to have the authority and seemed to have power and wisdom, they decided that they would build a city and that they would build a tower which would go up unto heaven. So that if they ever got astray from each other, they could look and they could see this tower. They knew where the place was. So they started to build this tower. They had brick and they had slime for mortar. They were on an even plain. They weren't on a mountain. If they wanted to build to get up to heaven, you'd think they would have built it on the top of a mountain. It would have been nearer. But no, they built on this plain. So this sand and this mud that was alongside of the river that flowed through there was very good for brick. The commentary says that he took some of this sand, took some of it and wetted it in the river, made mud pack out of it, and he let it out in the sun for a half hour, and he said it was just as hard as a stone. They used it to make pottery, and these people used it to make bricks. And they started to build this tower, an immense tower. They wanted to go up to heaven with it. But now this was not in the favor of God. God didn't want him to do this. And when God looked down from heaven and saw what the children of men were doing, which was contrary to what he decided that they should do, he said, three in the Godhead, they said, come, let us go down and look at what they're doing. Just like we would say, well, let us look and see what they're doing. And God came and looked and saw what the men were doing, and he said, there would be nothing almost impossible for men. So they spake to each other and said, let's confound their speech, so that they will not know what they are doing and how to express what they are to do. So this seems to be that there was only one speech upon the earth. Whether there were more languages before the flood, we don't know. Probably there were. But all mankind had been swept off the earth, and there was only one language left, and that was Noah's. And that language was the same as what Adam had been given when he was created. God put a tongue in his mouth and gave him a language. And this Noah had the same language. What was that language? The Hebrew language, which the Bible was written by. And this is what this language was. And these people were very industrious, very busy. They were getting bricks and they were getting slime and they were building this immense tower and this city. But not in the favor of God. That God confounded the languages of these people, and they stopped. They couldn't order each other what to do. They didn't know. I thought in my own little mind, I wonder if there were, even in one family, different languages. Could be. The Bible doesn't give us any definition of it. But anyway, this caused them to stop building this tower. And from then, they were spread all over the earth, which God wanted them to do. Now, this tower, my hearers, is often spoken of in a spiritual sense Whenever a person is wrought upon by the Spirit of God, I hope every one of you may be, then you will set to work. And you'll be very industrious, very zealous to do good works. You'll work 3 shifts a day on that. I know about it. You'll try to keep yourself from sin. You'll try to make yourself holy. You'll try to make yourself pleasing unto God. And inside you think you are doing good. You think, sure, God will reward you for this. You begin to build a tower, a Babel of good works. Have you ever tried it? If you have, and you've had grace, then that Babel, that tower, has come to nothing. God has just spoken once. Down falls that tower in a heap. Then you can see that it is not of works, but it is of grace. Until God shows you, you are busy trying to please God and trying to set up such a tower so that God will show grace, show mercy to your immortal soul. Oh, it isn't a very pleasant experience, my hearers. After working and striving and longing and trying to please God, to find that you can't please Him, to find that you're lost, that you're ruined, that you're undone. You don't know what to do with yourself when this takes place with you. These people didn't know what to do either anymore. They left off building the tower, and so you leave off trying to do things for God because it's useless. It's hopeless. But then when God begins to work, what a vast difference, my hearers. We work from the outside. We break off all things that we live in and think are sinful, but God works inside. God gives you a new heart. God puts His love in your heart. And what a difference this is, a day and night difference from the way you were working and the way God works. I hope you may know something thereof in this life. For if you never know anything of this, my dear hearers, it's a lost cause for your immortal soul. And now we find that these people were spread all over the earth. And in the next chapter, we have a whole register of all the people that descended from these 3 sons of Noah. Tremendous lot of people. And in this register, we find at the end of it, mention made of a man by the name of Terah, who had likewise a son by the name of Abram. And he had another son by the name of Nahor, and he had another son who had a son called Lot. I just forget the name of this other son, but this son, he died, and he left this son Lot. This son Lot, he was a nephew to Abraham. And now Abraham is living in the land of the Chaldees, an idolatrous land. In all probabilities, his father and everybody and his relatives, they were all idolaters. And now God came to Abraham in this land, and he called him out of Ur of the Chaldees. He called him, he put grace into his soul, he commanded him to forsake his father's house, to leave the country in which he dwelt, to let everybody go, and that he should go into a place which God would show unto him. Oh, my dear hearers, what a wonderful call this was, an effectual call by God into the heart of Abraham. We read in the Hebrews that Abraham, by faith, obeyed God, obeyed this call. I'm sure if God comes into your heart with His grace and calls you, you will also leave this world and everything that's in it. You will leave your wife, your children, you will leave your husband, whoever are your friends. You cannot go along with them in the path of sin anymore. You must leave them. And this is something that we can't do of ourselves. Who would want to do something like that of yourself? But God comes and you leave everything. Oh, my dear Hilly, Abraham, he took Lot, his brother's son, and all his substance, and his wife called Sarai, and he obeyed God. He went up out of the land of the Chaldees. According to the commentary, he came to Haran, and he dwelt there 5 years. And then he left Haran to come into the land of Canaan. He was 75 years old when God called him. Oh, I was thinking of that. But there's hope for everybody in the church. People say when you're old, God can never call you. He only calls young people. Don't believe it. We have an example of Abraham, 75 years old, called by the grace of God, called out of darkness into his marvelous light, called to go to a place which he did not know anything about, called inwardly with power divine, and given faith to obey and to leave everything. I wonder if there are any in this Bible class that I am teaching that have experienced something of this, an inward call, an effectual call, a call that caused you to leave everything. You got to love God, and he was the main thing in your life. So this is a call that comes to every elect sinner whom God has chosen from before the foundation of the world. Oh, it's so easy to do this, my hearers, when God does it for you. But to do it of yourself, you never can and you never will. So this man Abraham, he went up out of this land and he came into the land of Canaan. And he had no children. His wife was barren. And according to the history, she was a beautiful woman. But when he came into the land of Canaan, God appeared unto him. And God said unto him, unto thy seed will I give them this land. Promise. The promise that they would have children, that he would have a seed. He had none yet. Probably had been longing for a child, but they hadn't any children. A promise that God would be with him and likewise would bless him with a seed. This is what God does, by the way. When a person is brought upon the way, then God comes and gives him a promise. And that promise is such a stronghold to such a poor sinner. He can't always do everything what he wants with that promise. He would like to think of that promise all day long. He would like to pray about that promise. But many times he has no prayer with it. He can't exercise it. All he has is the memory of it. So this man Abraham, he had been a revelation of God. He appeared unto him and he spake unto him and he told him that he would give that seed that was coming forth out of him that country. He went a little further and again he builded an altar and God appeared unto him again. He had two appearances of God within a short space of time. Oh, how sweet they must have been to Abraham. That he was in the right way, that he was obeying God, that God was with him. And we find that Abraham, he continued on to the south. And there came a famine in the land. You would say, how is it possible? When you hear God speaking of this land unto the Israelites, it was a land that was flowing with milk and honey. There was everything in this land. And still there came a famine. There came a famine in the days of Jacob likewise. He sent his sons down into Egypt to get corn. There was a famine in the land of Canaan. There was a famine when Abraham was in the land traveling through it. So he went down south unto the land of Egypt. And now we have something about Abraham. He speaks to his wife before he comes into the land of Egypt. And he says to her, he says, now listen. He says, when we come into the land of Egypt, you say that you are my sister. Don't tell him you're my wife. because he says, they'll take you and they'll kill me. Now, where was Abraham's faith, right? He had two manifestations of God, promises of God that he was going to have a seed. Here he is. In unbelief, he speaks this way to his wife and tells her to say that she's his sister so that he wouldn't be killed. Now, what happened to Abraham and his wife in Egypt, we hope to continue next week, the Lord willing. No, next week we got Pentecost. Next week we got a different lesson. But the week after, probably, we'll pick up the lesson at that point. That's all for today.